This is episode number 484 with New York Times best-selling author Rob Bell. Welcome to the School of Greatness. My name is Lewis Howes, former pro athlete turned lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you discover how to unlock your inner greatness. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let the class begin. We have one of my favorite human beings on the show today. His name is Rob Bell, and he is a New York Times bestselling author, one of the greatest speakers I've ever seen in my life, and a former pastor. And he was the founder of Mars Hill Bible Church, located in Granville, Michigan, which he pastored until about 2012. And under his leadership, it was one of the fastest growing churches in all of America. And he is also the author of the New York Times bestseller, Love Wins, and along with about a dozen other books that are all incredible. And in 2011, Time Magazine named Rob on the list of the top 100 most influential people in the world. He went on a tour with Oprah for a whole summer. This guy is incredible. He's got a new book out called What is the Bible? And here's what's interesting about this. I love how Rob tells stories and relates stories, whether some people think are fictional or non-fictional, and how he relates it to modern day. And in this interview, we talk about how people are reading the Bible wrong, what the Bible actually is, what the antidote to despair is, why doubting something is not actually the problem, why truth has paradox built into every aspect of it, what the best way to serve others actually is, and so many more things that we cover on religion and spirituality and creating magic in the world. If you want to be inspired, then keep listening, because Rob Bell is one of those speakers and interviews that I just love the most. And he's a dear friend of mine, so I think you're going to really love this one. Also, want to give a quick shout out to the iTunes review of the week. And this is by Greg Cheek, who says, amazing podcast. Lewis backs up all these amazing podcasts with massive action to his audience. I start every day at the gym listening to his podcast to get me going. I watch Lewis and his guests at Mel Robbins spend hours with us all at Success Live in Dallas, answering questions about podcasts and entrepreneurship in general. And transitioning to my speaking business as a new author, and thus this podcast is a must. I recommend it for everyone seeking greatness. So Greg Cheek, thank you so much for being the iTunes review of the week. All right, guys, if you haven't left a review yet and you want a chance to be a review of the week, then go to itunes.com/greatness and leave a review right now. Without further ado, I've got Rob in the Greatness Studio. So let me introduce you to the one and only Rob Bell.
We've all been there. You have a question about your credit card, you call the number for help and can't get a hold of anyone if you only had a Discover card. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. A real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's Green Thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants, indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. See homedepot.com/delivery for details.
Want to connect with a family member who doesn't speak your language? Then check out the language learning program Rosetta Stone on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone is designed to immerse you in the language you're learning through an intuitive process. Plus, the True Accent feature even gives you feedback on your pronunciation. And with a lifetime membership, you have access to all 25 offered languages. Get started today. Visit rosettastone.com/pod50 to get 50% off your lifetime membership now. That's rosettastone.com/pod50 for 50% off.
Welcome, everyone, back to the School of Greatness podcast. We have one of my dear friends in the house, Rob Bell. Good to see you, man.
It's so good to see you.
How you doing?
It's so good to be with you again.
I'm so pumped. One, because the Cavs are winning right now. Go Cavs. Go LeBron.
Absolutely. And, I mean, like during NFL season, when you're over at our house on the couch for a whole Sunday, you need to come this week. You need to start coming over for playoffs.
I'm coming.
I got this new pasta I'm making with lentils. Oh, I think you'll love.
Your food is amazing. You've been going vegan, like trying different things. I love it.
Oh, we're trying all kinds of things.
Pesto, the almond pesto, I think you made one time.
I was thinking about the almond pesto for tonight.
Oh, I might have to come by.
Yeah. And especially when the Cavaliers with the greatest basketball player ever to play the game of basketball, LeBron James.
It's true. What is it? Six times has been in the
in a row?
Six times in a row
finals?
In the finals?
Right.
Is this seven or is this six?
This will be seven.
If he goes to the finals.
Yes.
When he goes to the finals.
Exactly.
Against the Golden State
Exactly.
Warriors.
You and I are so confident about this.
Unless something happens where they get injured, but knock on wood, they don't. I'm super pumped. The last time you were on was 2 years ago, we found out, almost, right?
Yeah.
2 years ago.
Yeah.
You've been on three times, I believe. It's really two, but we did a two-parter. Make sure you guys go watch and listen to the previous one. But, gosh, I'm surprised you haven't been on back since then. Because our conversation, maybe we just have these conversations when we're hanging out so much.
We have these conversations when we're hanging out. So to record it would be like, never
mind.
Yeah,
right, exactly. You've got a new book out called What is the Bible? How an Ancient Library of Poems, Letters, and Stories Can Transform the Way You Think About and Feel About Everything. And I'm pumped that you came out with this book. Here it is in the video if you guys are watching online. I'm pumped you came out with this book because I've had many conversations with you about the Bible and religion and spirituality and all these things because it's so confusing.
Yeah.
There's so many different points of views, opinions, judgments out there that part of me sometimes just like, screw the Bible, you know, thought process. Just kind of like, screw this because you know, it's very contradictory in the things it says. One person says something different than someone else. Someone said that God said something, and how do we know that's the truth? And it's goes all around and around. And I love there's a part here at the end where it says, don't drag God into it. Someone else wrote this, and that's how someone understood that event.
Yes.
It's not what God said to the person. It's what they think they felt or heard or thought about it, right?
Yeah, right, right.
And then they wrote down their experience.
Yeah, and I'd begin by saying, you're right, the Bible has caused so much damage. In many ways, it's often been an agent of dragging everything backwards. Mm. And it hasn't participated in the ongoing evolution of humanity. It's been a voice for primitive, outdated, violent, barbaric forces. I mean, even in our culture right now. So I'm aware that in 2017, to put out a book with the word Bible in it, for many people, just the word is like, seriously? Come on.
Right?
And actually, I think part of my work has been, to me, that's an injustice. And part of it is showing people what you were told about, you were told wrong. And most people aren't reading it well. Mm. From the hardcore right-wing religious to the hardcore against the Bible, most of them are reading it as fundamentalists and missing what's
really
going on here.
They're reading it as literal is what you mean.
They're almost like reading it and going, you either have to believe it literally is true or you have to deny that it literally happened that way. And both
and you're wrong
are a misunderstanding. The biologist, who's like, all you faith people are idiots, and the hardcore conservative fundamentalist who's like, well, you're going to burn in hell, are all actually reading this book differently. So I what you were saying, I think, is so helpful. The Bible was written by real people in real places at real times. So you start there. People wrote stuff down.
That's it.
And what's really interesting, like, the Bible was written on three different continents over 1,500 years by like 40 different authors.
1,500 years.
Yeah, yeah. So this is wide span of time. And a lot of things that are in the Bible were oral traditions. They were stories you told around the campfire to make sense of things. What does it mean to be a man? What does it mean to be a woman? How do you forgive? What if you've suffered abuse? What if your nation, what if your family have been the victims of injustice and you're owned by bitterness? And you know, if I don't forgive, I'm going to be consumed with this hatred. Mm-hmm. How do you do that? I mean, these are the questions humans have been asking for thousands of years. Or if you think about it in terms of like politics or how we organize ourselves, the Bible's written by a small group of people who had been conquered, a minority group that had been conquered by one global military superpower after another. So the Egyptians, the Babylonians, the Persians, the Seleucids, by the time of Jesus, it's the Romans. So these people have been on the receiving end of an untold amount of violence. Mm. So they're very suspicious of military power. And they're very suspicious of people who use their wealth to accumulate chariots, which were like the F-14s of the ancient world.
Right.
So if you're an American...
The Rolls Royce.
Yes.
Yeah.
If you're an American and you are a citizen of the most dominant global military superpower that humanity has ever produced, no wonder you would miss some of the central themes of this book. Mm-hmm. Because it's the original Rage Against the Machine. It's the original Bernie Sanders. Because this book is essentially from a small group of people saying, when you abuse your power, when there's a growing gap between rich and poor, there's even a line in the psalm, some trust in chariots, but we trust in God. But in the psalm, we in the modern world, we're the ones with the chariots. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
So I would bet for a lot of your listeners and viewers, the reason why the Bible was so misread is they grew up in a system that had to spiritualize this. It had to make it about what happens when you die. Because if you start reading the book as it actually came to us, these ancient letters and poems and stories,
yeah,
it's going to raise really provocative questions about you and the system that you're in.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't want to do that.
Yeah. Do you think it's important for everyone to study the Bible, even if they're not?
Well, actually, and like Reed College, I think it is in Oregon, a very progressive college, they have this brilliant thing in their student manual about how you should read the Bible because of its power as a cultural artifact beyond anything else. So,
right. Whether you believe in it as a religion or not.
So here's an example. I would argue that one of the strengths of your work is that what Lewis Howes does is you charge into people's lives who have basically fallen prey to despair. And despair is a spiritual condition, which is tomorrow will simply be a repeat of today.
Mm-hmm.
Despair is a spiritual disease because it is what happens when you come to believe that all that's happening from here on out is a repeat of this. And so the antidote to despair is a disruption where, oh, wait, tomorrow's not going to be a repeat of today. But in the ancient world, in the ancient Near East, they had a cyclical view of history, which is everything that's happened has happened before and will happen again. So this happened to your dad, happened to your dad's dad, happened to your mom, happened to your aunt. It's now happening to you. You'll pass it on to your kids. Everybody is essentially on the wheel. And so whatever's happened, just wait because it'll come back around again.
Man.
So the Bible...
That's not inspiring.
Exactly. So you think about, let's say, Genesis, first book of the Bible, chapter 12, a man named Abraham leaves his father's household. Well, the reason why that passage is so fascinating is this is the first time you have somebody leaving the wheel. Like when it says Abraham left.
Yeah.
If you're in a hotel and you see a Bible in the little end table thing and you read it and you were just to read and Abraham left, you'd be like, see, most boring book ever, in addition to the fact that it's long.
Yeah.
But if you got just a tiny bit of context, you'd realize, oh, Abraham leaving was a brand new way of thinking about reality. That you could create a new tomorrow, a tomorrow that hadn't existed before, that you could not be enslaved to despair. So I would just argue that like the work that you are doing, there are so many ideas that are present in our culture that if you were just to ask, where did that idea come from? It's amazing how many ideas come back to the Bible.
Right.
So at one level, there's like a religious, you should read the Bible because you're awful and maybe you'd get slightly better. I'm not interested in that, but I am interested in why have these stories endured for so long?
Mm-hmm.
And it's because a lot of the times they're progressive, radical ideas about what it means to be human. Mm-hmm. And who doesn't find that interesting?
But you're saying that it doesn't mean we have to take the literal word of everything that's said there. We should take it and interpret it in a way that works for us, is what I'm hearing.
Well, yeah,
you say.
And one of the things in the book I talk about is reading it literately, which is different than literally. So literally would be, is it a poem? Then you read it like a poem.
Mm.
And some agony, some betrayal, some struggle. If you talk about it literally, literal language won't do it justice. So my wife, Kristen, we're about to celebrate 23 years of marriage.
Wow.
If you were to say to me, why did I fall in love with my wife? And I said, well, she's 5'7", she drove a Honda, and she's from Arizona.
Yeah.
That's true. I mean, those are literal facts, but you'd be like, guys, one weird, you know what I mean? That is one weird relationship. But if I said to you, I don't know, when we got together, it was like I'd found my other half. Well, you mean like I was limping up till then? Or like, no, but you, I shifted into a completely different kind of language because that's the kind of language you use.
It's like a poem.
Sometimes you need a poem. Some things are so beautiful that a science textbook with technical language would actually ruin it. But then in other situations, I need the facts. I go to get my car fixed. I don't need the guy to say, well, your carburetor is just in a bad mood. You know what I mean? Like I need, yeah. It's the X945. We can get it here by tomorrow.
Yes.
So one of the main problems is modern people became so obsessed with technical, precise language. Exactly how tall, exactly how much does it weigh, exactly how much RAM does it possess, like that we're not as good at talking in other forms of language. And when you read this book, you're reading history mixed with poetry, you're reading poetry mixed with history, you're reading rants, you're reading letters.
People's pain.
Yes.
Frustrations.
Yeah, yeah.
There's their opinions on what should or shouldn't happen.
Absolutely.
Even based on their own situation.
Even the fact that, like, in the life of Jesus, there's four gospels. There's four gospels that differ on main points. And so some people would read that literally and go, see, it all disagrees or contradicts. It's four authors. They're writing with a particular agenda. Luke wants you to know that any spirituality that ignores the poor isn't going to cut it. And the Gospel of Mark, he has huge warnings about the corrosive effects of empire. What happens when the people in government with their hands on the wheel are completely insane? And what happens when they tell so many? Once again, we're just talking about the ancient world. What happens
today,
when the people of power? I mean, you think about the Gospel of Mark, its opening line is it borrows a line from Roman military propaganda. Because 2,000 years ago, what people were struggling with is this empire that's ruling me, they tell all these truths and half-truths and lies because it throws the masses off. And if you can just keep distracting with half-truths, then people don't know what to believe, and you can pull off all kinds of things.
You're talking about history, right?
Yeah,
just so, make it sure.
See, this is why when you talk about why I read the Bible, because when you read this, you're like, oh, wait, this... What we are talking about now is what people have been talking about for thousands of years.
Crazy.
And one of the problems with the modern world is why bother with any of that stuff from, you know, we have now, and we have all these amazing tools. Yes, and there's thousands of years of wisdom that we can draw upon. How do you deal with new technology? What does it mean to be human? And that's what makes it interesting to me.
Well, fascinating. And you were you had a church for many years in Michigan. It was one of the largest churches, fastest growing churches in the country, correct?
In another life, yes.
This is like 10 years ago or 15 years ago?
Yeah, it was a while ago.
Crazy. And you decided to leave the church, right? Or leave that. You kind of built it up and you realized it was time to move on.
Got to keep going.
Else. Yeah.
You have to keep
progress.
Going.
I'm curious. Is spirituality different for people who are religious versus people who are not religious?
What a great
from
question.
From your experience of being in the church to being out of the church.
Well, you think about the word religion, it comes from the word ligament, which holds things together. So the idea, ideally, was that religion would help hold you together. And it would remind you of the held togetherness of everything. So you go and you light a candle, and you direct your best energies, intentions towards your friend who's going through chemo. It connects you to your friend. It helps you deal with your own anxiety and worry about your friend's health. And if you do that, light that candle once a week for a couple weeks in a row, now you have a routine.
Yeah.
So we're not against that. So a lot of times when people are against religion, am I against institutions that oppress people and take their money for no good cause? You know what I mean? Yeah, of course. But human institutions, religious, government, business, religious institutions have no corner on the market on failing people compared to all the other ways the institutions and culture.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
To me, the really interesting thing that's happening now is people are realizing there is something, despite all the damage, especially religious institutions have done, there's some sense that we're a part of something, that we're connected, that life is a gift, that there are these dimensions of existence that you can't access with your five senses.
Yeah.
You and I get together and we start talking, and you could say like spirit is present. Something's flowing. We're bonded in ways that go beyond. We just like talking about sports.
Right.
And I think that is because this, you can throw, it's like a lot of people are rescuing babies from bathwater. Like, we were handed these religious systems that didn't work for us. Mm-hmm. And so people are tossing these systems that didn't work, but realizing, oh, in that somewhere was something really powerful and helpful and divine, transcendent, infinite.
Yeah.
And so I would just say that some practice, and some people meditate and yoga and walk and hike, and some people go to communities and services and light candles and do baptisms and
therapy or whatever.
Absolutely. It's all part of receiving this extraordinary gift of life and doing something with it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you attend church?
What are we doing right now?
One of my favorite parts about my job is that I get the opportunity to travel a lot. And in fact, I'm recording this right now while I'm in Mexico. And actually, I was thinking about something that I wanted to share because I get a lot of questions from so many people about different side hustle ideas. So here's one for those of you out there that are on the go a lot like I am, or traveling a lot. When you're staying in your Airbnb on your trips, have you ever thought about how you could be making extra money by hosting through Airbnb while your home is vacant? If you're interested in an extra stream of income, Airbnb hosting is an easy place to start, and it's like giving your home some company while you're away. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. So listen, we all know life is full of yada yada, like those quote unquote free trials that somehow still charge your card for something, or when companies have those sneaky gotchas hiding deep in the fine print. And I know you've dealt with yada yada before, like those bills that keep going up and up for no reason at all, or when budget airlines promise a cheap fare but then charge you for every little thing until you realize you're paying more than you would have somewhere else. And yes, it is possible to outsmart yada yada, like triple checking airline deals to make sure all you need is already included, but you don't take yada yada in life, so don't take yada yada from your wireless provider. Metro by T-Mobile has no contracts, no credit checks, no surprises, and nada yada yada. Stop by one of over 6,000 Metro stores nationwide.
Want to connect with a family member who doesn't speak your language? Then check out the language learning program Rosetta Stone on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone is designed to immerse you in the language you're learning through an intuitive process. Plus, the True Accent feature even gives you feedback on your pronunciation. And with a lifetime membership, you have access to all 25 offered languages. Get started today. Visit rosettastone.com/pod50 to get 50% off your lifetime membership now. That's rosettastone.com/pod50 for 50% off.
Do you go to a structure that is,
you know, I usually on Sunday mornings, I go surfing, and then I usually record a sermon for my podcast.
There you go.
And then my family and I have a big meal.
Amazing.
That's what I
so
do.
So it's your version, your own version.
Yeah, and actually my work, I like to go places. I don't really do any work in churches or formal religious settings now. Mm. I like, my job is to go into places where you would never think about spirituality or even religion, and talk to people about how the whole thing is a temple.
Mm-hmm.
To talk to people about the depth,
the world
of life. Yeah, yeah. We're not trying to build a temple and get people into it. And I would actually argue that was at the center of Jesus' message. Was there was a temple in his day, and he was like, that thing's coming down. I would argue
he was out with the people, right?
I would argue that the center of his message was the announcement that the whole thing is a temple. Work, business, raising a family, art, caring for the environment, all of this, standing up for the rights of refugees and immigrants, all of this is holy, sacred work. You have an interesting idea about how to give people a product that would serve them well, and you go after that, what? Of course, that's part of what it means to be a spiritual person.
Mm.
Yeah, the whole thing's a temple.
Mm. How much did you study the Bible?
Well,
were you reading it?
I mean, like
lot?
I went, to, like I went to seminary, mm-hmm. so I did like a master's degree where you study like form and textual criticism, and I studied Greek and Hebrew. I did all that stuff for a number of years.
Wow.
And then I got a job in a church. This would have been my early 20s, and I started giving sermons. Because the sermon for me, I realized I'm here to reclaim the sermon as the art form that it is. That the sermon got hijacked along the way. Mm. It got hijacked by people who are trying to raise, build bigger buildings. It's like an edifice complex. You know what I mean? Like, let's just, and for some people, the sermon got hijacked by, we're just going to keep telling you what you're supposed to believe over and over again, then we'll feel right and everybody else is wrong. But to me, the sermon was like this subversive guerrilla theater art form. You think about Martin Luther King, I have a dream. That was a sermon, but it was like an event. Mm. Nobody heard that, and they were like, I don't know, he was better last week. Right. No way. That was like a moment, and you were caught up in it, and you either, you got it or you didn't, or it was dangerous and beautiful and counterintuitive and hopeful and revolutionary. And so that's what I set out to do. And in the tradition I came from, you'd give a sermon from the Bible. So I started reading the Bible in light of like, now I got to say something about it publicly.
Right. Your opinion on it, right?
And then gradually, which is what I sort of trace in the book, I started realizing, oh, people have no idea what's in this book.
No one actually reads it.
And the people, they don't actually, because if they read it, you would have to change the whole game, because it is so subversive. And there's a collection of psalms in the middle of the Bible called psalms, like prayers. Half of them are laments, which are basically, God, where are you? They're about the absence of God. Or like on the cross, Jesus says, my God, why have you forsaken me? This is like the day God became an atheist. There's all of this beautiful atheism in the Bible. Or even the word Israel means struggle. So the fundamental story of the Bible is about this tribe called Israel, and their name is struggle. So every person who's ever been like, why was I abused? Why is this system so corrupt? Don't tell me this universe is a safe place. Yeah, it's all part of the struggle.
Right.
You know what I mean? So even when I got into it, I was like, people aren't reading this, because if they were reading this, they would have such different understandings of the whole thing, that doubt is a part of faith. If you don't have doubts, like the pulse of faith, if you don't have, the problem isn't that you're doubting. The problem is that you don't have any doubts. And that this book, time and time again, like turned left when everybody turned right. And I think probably at some deep, deep personal level, I was like, this is an injustice. This is an injustice.
The book.
That this book has been so misread.
Right.
That for so many people, Christian means Republican, capitalist, that for so many people, spirituality and faith mean the absence of pain, doubt, struggle, that the embrace of science and the joy of new discoveries is somehow seen as being against this. Like, I think something within me just began, like, I'm gonna change it.
Wow. Because a lot of it is like this blind faith, right? It's like, just have faith that this is the way it is. It's kind of what people are taught.
Exactly. And which like, which couldn't be more the opposite of the scriptures. Jesus is asked lots and lots and lots of questions. He answers one of them in all the gospels. Every other question, he responds with a question. How do you read it? How do you interpret it? What do you think about it?
It's a great coach.
Who do you think I am?
It's a great coach.
Absolutely.
Not giving the answer, but having someone discover the answer within themselves.
Yes. So I'm like in my early 20s. I get hired in a church, and it was a big church. And my job is to give these sermons. And so I start reading this book, and I'm like, oh, this whole system is actually almost as perfectly engineered and designed to inoculate people against what this book is actually saying. You know what I mean? Because if they start reading this book, it will challenge the very fabric of this entire system. And then I just kept going and took it where I followed it where it led me.
This is a challenge for being a curious mind myself. And I've interviewed all these fascinating individuals, a lot of different spiritual leaders, meditators, business leaders. And my beliefs have shifted because everyone has a different opinion, and I can look at it and say, huh, that's actually an interesting opinion. Let me dive into that a little more and study it and see what makes sense, if it resonates with me or if it doesn't, if it works for me or if it doesn't. I just went to India and studied meditation for a couple of weeks, and I didn't get to dive into it as much as I wanted to, but essentially I talked to the person who started this meditation training, and I was like, so do you believe in God or not? And he's like, do you want the real answer? And I was like, yes. He's like, it's not going to be a popular one, and you're going to think it sounds very egotistical. And I'm, you know, paraphrasing it, but he was like, I believe that we all are our own God, essentially. That the wisdom is within us.
Yeah.
And we can end our suffering when we choose to. We have the choice. Based on obsessive, self-centric thinking, we suffer, we worry, we stress, we have anxiety.
We inflict all this agony on ourselves.
When we remove, and then we say, well, we need, if we, you know, if God is the only person that can end our suffering, if we're like praying to something to end it, we can always choose to end it whenever we want. When we're aware and we remove those thoughts and think about something else, come from a place of gratitude and a place of, you know, opportunity and control or whatever these other things. And so there's just so many different opinions out there.
Right.
There's science. You know, you had an incredible tour where you talked about, you know, a particle that turns
into the expanding universe.
Another thing, and the next thing, we're always creating something new.
Yeah.
Like, what is the truth? What is the answer?
Well, the first thing is to realize if it's true, then it will... If it's true, then it will fundamentally have paradox baked into it.
Give me an example.
Okay, let's say there's some infinite divine source of everything.
Mm-hmm.
However you want to define, because even when people use the word God, that's so loaded.
It's
so
like,
Let's say there's some divine source of it all.
Mm-hmm.
If you could fully know that source,
meaning creation of it all, or just
the whole thing
where
flows
it comes from
something, it's sustained by something. Something more than just the physical reality we see.
Yes.
Let's just say like a really basic idea like that. If it was completely knowable, then it wouldn't be infinite. It wouldn't be very big. If your mind could wrap itself around there, that's not really going to be capable of sustaining something this interesting.
Right.
But if it was unknowable and elsewhere, then what about all the great art? What about all the moments of love when you're like, there's something infinite happening between us?
Yeah.
So source would be both known and unknown. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
So there would be a fundamental ambiguity that would sit side by side with the clarity. I know that when I serve and give beyond myself, something happens that I affirm that I can't quite fully comprehend, but is real. By the way, the Germans had a word for this, Grenzebegriff. The German word Grenzebegriff means that which is real, but beyond analysis. So it's that which in your bones, Lewis Howes is like, when I give and serve and move beyond myself and don't just ask what's good for Lewis Howes, but what do I have that I could share? I am at that level connecting with something much larger than myself.
Yeah.
And the worse off the conditions are, the more it costs, somehow it pulls something out of me even more, which is transcendent, supernatural, divine, miraculous, whatever you want to say. So that is both as real as it gets for you, and yet put that on a spreadsheet. You know what I mean?
Right.
Take a photo of that on your iPad.
Right.
So if it is real, if there is some divine source, it's going to pull multiple things. So you can see then the danger of a fundamentalism. This is like, this is how big God is. These are the seven steps. These are the, it's like, no, you haven't left enough room for mystery. But the, I don't know, man. We can't know anything. But I know this guy, Lewis Howes, and when he serves, it makes the world better. So we can know that. So it would have this, both universal and particular, would have both this absolute and this ever-evolving. And that is, I would argue, the problem is people fall to either side and aren't willing, because the modern mind loves the binary.
Yeah.
Is it this or is it this? Are you a winner or are you a loser?
Right.
Success or failure. But the problem is in failure is where all this interesting stuff happens. So essentially, even to talk about God in a way that might actually not make you crazy, you have to move from this binary thinking to what some would call a non-dual awareness, where you begin to be able to hold two truths that appear to be opposing at the same time. So I would start there.
So what?
And now
we have something to talk about.
Now we have something to talk about. Like in that Everything is Spiritual tour that you came to?
Yes. I mean, because
13.8 billion years ago, the universe explodes out of infinite compression an infinitely compressed point of nothingness, sometimes called a singularity. That's what scientists are saying right now, is that the universe is 13.8 billion years ago and it came out of a point of infinity and it's just been expanding ever since. And at first it was just subatomic particles, and then about 3 minutes in it formed atoms. Those atoms formed molecules. Somewhere around the 13 billion mark, those molecules began to form cells, and you had inorganic and then organic cellular life. And then sometime in the 13 billion, that's about 9 billion, 13 billion years in, you have the Earth with animals, and then you have these sentient, upright Homo sapiens that can write poems and talk about this stuff. Like, and people are like, there's no mystery? That just happened? So I would, my starting point, any discussion about God would be, to me, would simply be, we're here, and this thing has been expanding and unfolding. And if you're going to tell me, no, it's just molecules, it's just synapses, it's just cells, I would say, seriously? The most intellectually honest thing to me would be to leave space for something. Let's just start there.
Yeah.
Then the question becomes, well, what would you name that? It's interesting, in the Bible, there's lots and lots of different names for God. Because essentially when you use the word God, you're trying to name ultimate reality. So, and that's what actually started to happen to me when I was reading, citing the Bible, is I was like, wait, there's a bunch of different names for God here. And this person uses this name, and this person talks about mystery. This person talks about revelation, the idea that you there's some things you can know. So that's what happened to me, is when you're like, well, how can you know which is which? This is what the writers of the Bible were wrestling with.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Or how can we know if God is on our side? Because we're slaves. Is God okay with this arrangement? Is the universe okay with this person owning us? So the Exodus story, this big giant rescue of slaves and Moses, that was a story asking the question, is the universe okay with us being owned? And the story was about, no, it's not. God is actually the God of the oppressed. The forces are on the side of the underdog, the immigrant, the refugee, the single mom. So that's always, to me, an abstract talk about God.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? But I start talking about, if there is a God who's, well, definitely that God would be on the side of the refugee,
right?
The immigrant,
yeah,
the single parent trying to hold it together. Much more interesting.
Yeah. What's the beliefs that you've had maybe over the last 20 years that have been shaken up, that you thought like, this is 100%
true? Oh, right, right, right.
And then, oh, actually, let me lean into this a little bit. And
absolutely, yeah, right.
Actually, no, it's, for me, it's not my belief anymore. What's, is there anything that's happened in the last 20 and also 10 and also 5 and 2 years?
Absolutely. I can think of one right away. The realization that spiritual was not things that exist in some other realm. And when you die, then you go to some other realm. But the spiritual means soil, food, good business, surfing, sex, music, creativity. That caring for the earth is central to a spiritual understanding of life. And that the tradition I came up from, spiritual meant kind of 6 inches off the ground and kind of other world. Like you sit on your cushion and you go somewhere, escape from the dirt and sweat of life. And when I began to read this book and was like, wait, spirituality is about your engagement with the dirt and sweat and stuff of life. So that was like a huge shift.
Wow.
Second one, man, the tradition I came up from, who's a Christian, who's not? So-and-so a Christian? Are they thinking about becoming a Christian? Oh, they're not? Oh, so-and-so? Cliff, nice guy, not a Christian.
Wow.
And when I began to realize lots of people who make a big deal about being Christians are nothing like the Jesus message of compassion, grace, courage, nonviolence. And I keep meeting people who would never call themselves a Christian who embody all of the best about what it means to be a human being. So those labels started to mean next to nothing. And then I kept meeting atheists who, when they talked about the God they don't believe in, I don't believe in that God either. And then they would talk about the upbringing in which they were told about this version of God. And I'd be like, atheism is the only healthy spiritual response
right,
to that.
Right.
So I started to realize atheism and atheist and believer started to mean those categories didn't, because half the time I'm with you. So those categories just started to mean nothing to me. Literally to this day, mean next to nothing. But you and I and the talks we have and the depth of life and human experience that you and I want to taste and feel and soak in, that's something. Mm-hmm. That's worth talking about.
Absolutely. What would you say is your purpose now? And how has it evolved?
I want to help people connect with the depth and joy of life. And I use those two because the moment you talk about joy, people are like, what about cancer? That's why I talk about depth. Is what the modern world does is it cuts you off from the depth of life. Just skim the surface. Just numb the pain. Just skate. And I do that because I come out of this Jesus tradition that believes that there is a fullness to life that you can actually experience.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I want to talk about, the joy and the depth. And I just keep announcing that the whole thing is a temple.
Everything.
It's all sacred. It's all holy.
You don't have to go on Sundays to reach
man,
it.
The whole thing's a temple. Yeah. The meal, the conversation, the waves I will be catching tomorrow. You know what I mean? It's all my kids. Trying to launch a business, trying to get along with an ex-spouse. It all takes place in a temple.
Mm.
Yeah. All this ground is holy.
What do you think is missing for most people in order to reach some type of depth and joy?
That everything you are working and striving for, you already have. That so often we're working, sweating, clinging, grasping, striving to feel worthy enough. And the fundamental good news, what's called the gospel, is the announcement that you're loved exactly as you are. You don't have to do anything. You're already a daughter of the divine. You're already a son of the divine. You're already in. There's this great line in this story of the prodigal son where the father says, "You are always with me. And everything I have is yours." It's interesting when you talk about, well, what do you think about God? I think in images, I think in lines, I think in pictures, and I think in like dialogue, like, you are always with me. And everything I have is yours. So all of the stuff that we do to feel like we measure up, that we're worth, it's all been taken care of. You're fine. Now, in response to that, let's make some stuff.
Let's do something.
Let's go do something. Yeah, but then we're coming from a different place. And we're not doing this to prove something. We're not doing this to earn something. We're not doing this
over someone
to somehow scratch some itch or stroke some part of the heart that desperately has been beaten down and doesn't know. You're okay. In all of your not togetherness, you're all fine. Mm-hmm. All the ways you've made a mess of it, it's okay. It's okay. All the ways we've screwed it up.
Yeah.
We're not. It's okay.
Do you feel like there's anything in your life where you suffer?
Yeah, although I say that in light of how people really suffer.
Right, of course. I mean, you've got a nice home, you've got a great family,
Food. So I've seen too much of the world.
You're in Hollywood, you know.
Yeah, right. I can almost see my house
exactly,
from the place, by the way.
You've got things done well, but we all have our own inner battles.
And
what are yours if you have any?
Yeah, I'll tell you, the inner dialogue that says, push, it's not enough. You're still earning. You're still, you do an interview and later I'm like, oh, what did I answer it that way for? And that, like, that voice that always wants to be like, see, you don't have it. You don't have what it takes. You seriously want to play this game? Come on. Who are we kidding?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, I'm here. How much fun is this? This is a gift. You get to receive it. There is a wonder and awe to existence. And the struggle for me is when you lose that and you feel entitled. You feel like, yeah, that's nice. But, you know, the real world is a place where you can have wonder and awe. That's every day. So sitting in silence, the practices that sort of take me back to center. We're here. We're breathing. It's another day. Let's try some things.
Yeah.
Start clean with Clorox because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
I need the charcoal mask. Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink?
This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera.
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.
Want to connect with a family member who doesn't speak your language? Then check out the language learning program Rosetta Stone on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone is designed to immerse you in the language you're learning through an intuitive process. Plus, the True Accent feature even gives you feedback on your pronunciation. And with a lifetime membership, you have access to all 25 offered languages. Get started today. Visit rosettastone.com/pod50 to get 50% off your lifetime membership now. That's rosettastone.com/pod50 for 50% off.
You've been on a journey over the last, I think, like 4 to 6 months where you've been surfing almost every day. Is that right?
Quite a bit, yeah.
Pretty much like 4 or 5 days a week or
yeah,
what?
Yeah, I probably started 6 years ago surfing a ton. Because and at first it was like, oh, this, you know, if you have some time, what a nice hobby, what a lovely sport. And I know that the surfers who listen to you will know what I'm talking about. And then it turns into something similar to oxygen, where it's like practice. And I was actually doing this event with a legendary Buddhist teacher, and I was talking about surfing, and then I was like, but I probably shouldn't say anymore because I'll just start gushing and it doesn't sound right. And he's like, oh, you mean moving meditation. I was like, you have a word for this? He's like, yeah, that's a moving meditation. What you're describing is a meditation, but if I try to sit still on a couch or a cushion, it's not going to go well.
Yeah.
But I move. And like not yesterday morning before last, this pod of dolphins is in the water in the lineup, and they're coming in among us, and they're jumping all the way out of the water like this.
Wow.
And they're coming like me to you. So you almost like curl your toes in a touch just because they're like playing, and the dolphin isn't like, I'm a dolphin. It's just being a dolphin. And it just, every time it does something to you.
Oh,
there's
my gosh.
Something that happens. Yeah.
Where was this?
Right between
Santa Monica or what? No.
Yeah, North Venice, really? South Santa Monica, right in that
dolphins
stretch.
Dolphins are going right there.
Oh, yeah. The other day at Topanga, there was a nice big whale went through.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah.
That's a little scary.
A whale is another category of experience. You're never like, oh, a whale. And I've now seen whales for a number of years. And close, one time Kristen and I were stand-up paddling, and a whale went under her, surfaced between us, and then went under me.
That's terrifying.
Yeah.
But it's inspiring like and crazy.
Well, it's interesting. It is like a terror that is benign. It's not going to hurt you, but it's also like the size of your house.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's what strikes me about this is we have good things, friendly things, nice things in our lives that we're used to, and then we have things that are terrifying to us. But rarely are those two things the same experience. It's both terrifying and good. Like, rarely do you experience that in the water,
right,
and then in the water with this, like, blowhole sound.
That's crazy. Yeah, now if it was a shark, it'd be a difference. It'd just be terrifying.
Right? I saw a great white breach the other day at Sunset Point.
No way.
And I had read that they were at this spot that I really like.
When you were surfing.
Yeah. And this guy next to me, I was like, I wonder if what I saw, I just saw. So I look over at the guy next to me, and he's like, did you see that? I was like, yeah. And he's like, I had heard there were great whites out here.
You stayed?
Of course.
Oh my gosh.
All the other people, you know, if you want to paddle in, that's fine. It's just more waves for us.
Exactly. Now, what are the biggest lessons you've learned in the last, I guess, 6 months? Since you've been doing this pretty much daily, I know we had a conversation where
you're going there
like all day until like a certain time, and you're not, no
oh,
phone.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You're just kind of like, take your journal. What's the big lessons you've learned about doing this every single day as opposed to just jumping in kind of like the rat race of like be on your phone and like working all day and...
Yeah, last year I finished a world tour, end of November, and I was kind of cooked.
Yeah.
I'd been to a lot of cities, and so I needed, like, okay, I need to, like, reset the whole thing. So I was like, okay, first thing I'm going to try to do is each day I'm not going to enter Screenland till late in the day. So I just named it Screenland, and I'm going to work with, I'm going to take pen and paper with me, and I'm going to just listen because my work is creating things. I make things and then share them. And then there comes this end of a season when I have to like cook it all up again and I have to stop talking. So that was probably the end of November. I started I would spend the first part of the day in silence. I'd go surfing, and then I would just sit with pen and just note what was going on inside of me. And I wouldn't check any phone or email till like after 4 p.m.
Really?
And
so you get up, you go to the beach.
By the way, when you do this, email takes you a tenth of the time. Because one of the things about email is you're like, I don't know, should I do this? Should I not do this? What's this going to do? When you have spent the first part of the day simply listening to who you are and what's happening, there are all these things that are coming at you that you're burning all this energy trying to figure out. But when you're coming from a different place, you're like, oh, of course I do that. Or no. And how many things come our way that are no's, but we're not at full power, strength, whatever you want to say, clarity.
Yes.
And so how many times you'll like sit on it and then you'll sort of...
A lot.
And then you're like, you realize later you said yes because you don't want the person to think less of you. You want them to like you.
And then you regret doing it when the time comes you have to do something.
And then you're like, doing it. You're like, why is this? Oh, this is because last February I was tired on a Thursday and I said yes. So as I began to think through, oh, the more time I spend away from Screenland, when I do enter Screenland, I'm able to see Screenland for what it is. And I'm not, that's not my path. I'm not to do that. And letting that person down is the only path forward. So let's just let them down.
Right.
And I also was struck that it wasn't like we went a couple of weeks and then it was like, oh, good, I'm rested. Let's go back at it. The interior is infinite. See, for many people, the universe, does it just go on forever? Does it just push on forever? Could you just travel if you had a ship and you could just go and go and go? So exteriors, we're comfortable with the idea of that it's infinite. Or maybe there's a door that Jim Carrey goes through at the very end.
Right.
But interiors are infinite.
Wow.
So, and you'd find this fascinating because you do speaking.
Yeah.
It got like December, January, on a random day in January, sitting there, I would remember some event the previous July where I was standing in line after doing an event and somebody plugged in, you know, and wanted something or took something or, you know, let me feeling when people want a piece of you and I would become aware of it. Oh, that was actually a deeply draining, troubling interaction. But in the moment, we got to keep going. Here we go. Da, da, da. And I didn't spend time thinking about what that was.
Right.
And that's in there. It's like we store. They talk about a pain body.
Mm.
We store all these experiences we have, and we're carrying them around. No wonder a relationship can be hard to sustain. This person isn't even aware of the stuff they're carrying around. And this other person has got a world of wound, desire, pain, hurt, loss. And then they're trying to connect when we often aren't even connected with what's happening inside of ourselves.
Mm.
Yeah, and that's what's... So now I'm like 4 or 5 months in.
You're still going to every
this,
day.
And now my day is completely backwards from what it used to be. I used to wake up, turn on the email, and then it's like, here we go. And now I'm like, it'll be there. It'll be there when we get to it.
And what's the big thing you've learned about this journey?
Most emergencies aren't.
Mm-hmm.
And...
You feel more productive than?
Oh, 10 times more.
Wow.
And that you taking good care of yourself, which is not rocket science, is the best way that you serve others. And how you just start giving little pieces of yourself away and then wonder why you feel like a shell. And it feels selfish and it feels counterintuitive and it feels like, oh, you're just... But it's actually the best way that you give yourself to the world.
Mm.
As you begin... by whatever practices, habits, routines, rituals actually hold you together.
Wow.
Yeah. That's the thing right there.
Sounds nice for you, but most men are probably thinking like, oh, my wife would never let me do that. You know, let's just go to the beach for all day.
Yeah, what's interesting about your... Yeah, I'm not really at the beach every day. but I would begin with your wife does want you fully alive.
Mm.
And she does want you at your best.
Right.
So let's start there.
Yeah.
That might look different.
You also obviously have, you know... resources now and flexibility and freedom with what you've created for the last 20 years in your life. So you have those options, but
yeah, but I don't, I don't spend any more, like surfing, I don't spend any more time surfing than most people would spend going to the gym or something.
Right.
And like my wife went back to graduate school.
That's
so
right.
Our 8-year-old and then our 16-year-old and 18-year-old, I like step into some Mr. Momming. But even then, I get more done than I used to simply because.
You're taking care of yourself.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Which and that's been a long, slow evolving, just learning how to be at the best so that we can do what we need to do.
Yeah. If there was if you were the author of a new book called The Bible of Today, right? And all the writers of these poems and letters and lectures and stories said, Rob, we want there to be a new Bible and we want you to write it. And we want you to do your best. Obviously, this is your interpretation, but we feel like you have the keys to the kingdom to be able to write something that would help a lot of people in this world, no matter what religion, what they believe, what they don't believe. But this would be the new Bible. What do you think you would cover?
What would I cover?
Yeah, what would you write about? What would you cover? How long would it be to get the message across? And what would you want really people to feel at the end of reading this?
That is a fantastic story. I would go to the poorest places in the world and interview people. What do you want? Mm. What do you need? What burns in your heart? I'd start there. I'd start with those who the system isn't working and feel left out and at the edges. I would always, you go looking for the divine, you start there. And then I would interview scientists and artists, and then I would go interview farmers about the earth. I would interview people. What do you see? What has been your experience? Tell me about your pain. Tell me what helps. Hmm. Tell me about your wounds. Tell me about your healing. Yeah, I would not write it as an abstract. I can't believe I even bought into your premise. I just realized I actually took your question seriously. Any guy who takes your question seriously should be questioned. but I would begin not with abstract intellectual ideas. I would begin with sweat and blood and wealth and poverty and strength and weakness. I'd begin there.
I'd read that book.
Yeah. That's where I'd start. And I would edit it together in such a way that you might, in reading those stories, think, something's going on here. Mm. Something's going on here that I could be a part of. That's how I do it.
Mm. When are you going to start writing it?
That, seriously, no one has ever asked a question like that. That's a good one.
Yeah, it is.
That's a bizarre one. I can't believe I
think it'd be a powerful book.
Actually, probably all my books are at some level me trying to
answer that question.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's this interesting line I point to this, but there's this interesting line where Jesus says you'll do greater things than these. And it always strikes me, I wonder, like if there was a Jesus who came back, I wonder if he'd be like, why are you guys still talking about me? Like my whole point was that you'd go out and do it. I actually think some of the Bible writers would be like, why do you keep repeating me? Thanks, fair play, appreciate it. But the goal was that you would carry the story forward.
Mm-hmm. And help the people in your time and your day, yeah.
Right. The goal would be that you would learn what you could from what we went through, but then new metaphors, new images. Like, for example, artificial intelligence. This already you have people saying, hey, wait a second. Not all progress is progress. This could come with all sorts of things attached to it that we might be really wise to just watch carefully. Well, this is new technology. This is new fire. So how will it be used? What will it do? What will it say about what it means to be human? These are all the very questions that we're asking now, they're talking about iron. They're talking about stepping out of a cycle of despair. It's all the same sorts of questions.
Yeah. A few questions left for you, but I want to make sure you guys go get this book, What is the Bible? How an ancient library of poems, letters, and stories can transform the way you think and feel about everything. You can go get it at robbell.com, or you can go on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, everywhere else the books are sold. I don't think I asked you this question on the last time. So I'm going to ask it to you here. And this is called The Three Truths.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I think I asked you this one before.
No.
Because I started asking, I think, after you came on. You've written how many books now?
This is like the 10th or 11th.
10th or 11th. Who's counting? 3 New York Times bestsellers, tours, speaking everywhere, on tour with Oprah, all that good stuff, documentaries. This is, let's say, 100 years is the last day for you, right? You live for another 100 years plus whatever, as long as you want to live, and you achieve everything that you set out to do. All your dreams, you create it, you do whatever you want. You make it come true. But for whatever reason, all your work is erased, and it's not available for people to learn or read or watch anymore. But you have a piece of paper and a pen, and you get to write down three truths, the three things you know to be true, the lessons that you would pass on to the people after you're gone. For the whole world, this is all they see, are these three lines or lessons. What would your three truths be?
Well, the first truth would be use the fine china. Because when Kristen and I were married, when you have to register, this is like 25 years ago, whatever, I learned that you register for two different kinds of plates.
Uh-huh.
There's the everyday plates, and then I was just watching this as a dude who couldn't care less about any of this, and then you register for this fine china. And the fine china is basically these boxes of really nice plates that you haul around from apartment to apartment that you use once or twice a year. And when you do, you're like, don't break them, take good care of them. And when I went through a bad burnout a number of years ago, like, crashed, hit the wall, didn't know if I could work again. I sort of started to get back on my feet. I started serving my boys breakfast on the fine china because we only have today. So we're going to use the fine china because we're feasting, because we have no guarantee of tomorrow. So the first thing I'd say is use the fine china. Second thing I would say is forgive everybody for everything. And that doesn't mean condone what they did. Doesn't mean brush it under the rug. It just means you have to take part in a larger flow of forgiveness, because you hold on to any of that bitterness for anything anybody has done to you and it will eat you alive. You will drink rat poison and then wonder why the rat isn't dying. So forgive, forgive, forgive. And then the third thing I would write down is everything is spiritual. It's all connected. It has infinite depth. And don't ever think that all of this isn't related to every other part of it. Everything is spiritual. And that's where the wonder and the awe and the mojo and the juice and the joy comes from. Those are three things.
Those are powerful.
There you go.
I like those. Is there a question that you've always wanted someone to ask you that they never have?
That is it. No, I don't think about interviews. I'm more interested in what you want to talk about. I never come into an interview with an agenda or assumptions.
But you wish, is there a question you wish people would ask you more about that? There doesn't have to be. I'm just curious.
No, I don't. Maybe I just don't know.
And if you had to have a tattoo on your forehead in reverse that only you could see if you're in the mirror, what would that word or phrase be?
Yeah, I would have grace and peace, because these two polarities, grace and peace. Grace is it's all a gift, and peace is, so in response to that, go help increase the peace in the world.
Okay.
One's about awareness, one's about action, one's about doing nothing, one's about doing whatever you can. Yeah.
Okay. I'll look for that tattoo in the future. One final question before I ask. I want to acknowledge you, Rob, for your childlike curiosity and play and joy. I think the thing I love about you the most is that you always have, you find wonder in every little thing throughout the day. Whenever we're hanging out, there's always like something interesting. Like
we're cooking something.
Yeah, it's always like you're just fascinated by things.
Yeah, I am.
By everything.
That's true.
How it works, how it moves, an idea, a possibility. And you bring it with like love and joy and passion and childlike wonder. And I think most people that I interact with who get older don't have that childlike wonder. And I think that's what brings the most like love in the world is this childlike curiosity and trust and questioning and connection. So I want to acknowledge you for that and your ability to recognize also when you need to make sure you're taking care of yourself. And staying consistent with that, because you're right. I don't think you have such a big heart and this mind of wisdom that could help so many people. And you making sure you're taking care of yourself is so powerful because you're helping more people in that process as opposed to being burnt out. So I acknowledge you for taking a step to the side to take care of yourself so you can help more people. Yeah.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Thank you.
Final question is, what's your definition of greatness?
Greatness is when you leave the room and the people in the room have more hope than when you entered.
Rob Bell. Thank you, man. Appreciate it. Oh, snap. There you have it, guys. I hope you enjoyed this one. Rob, again, is one of my favorite people in the world and so fascinating the way he shares stories and his experience and knowledge and wisdom, and I just love it. Every time I'm around him, I just feel like a better human being. So if you enjoyed this, then make sure to share it out. LewisHowes.com/484. And tag me at Lewis Howes and tag Rob Bell on Twitter and Instagram stories and let us know what you thought of this one. I want to connect with you more on social media, so tag me at Lewis Howes. I love you guys very much. You were given such incredible gifts on this planet. You were born with unique gifts and you can develop any talent that you want. It's your opportunity to make the most of every single day. Don't waste a second. Continue to stay committed to your vision. Stay focused on your vision. Eliminate negative thoughts and negative people in your life and be the light that others need to rid the darkness from within them. I love you guys very much, and you know what time it is. It's time to go out there and do something great.